WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. A federal judge ruled today that federal probationary workers who were fired must be offered reinstatement. Jake Rosen reports.
The agency head who would actually oversee any administrative complaints that these employees had was fired too. So basically these employees were left with no recourse to try to save their jobs. And today a judge did that for them, at least temporarily.
A Senate committee was to hold a hearing today on President Trump's choice to lead the CDC. The hearing was canceled an hour before it was to begin. The nomination of David Weldon withdrawn. President Trump met at the White House today with NATO Secretary General. They talked about ending the war in Ukraine.
Everybody feels the same way. We want it to stop. It's also a tremendous cost to the United States and to other countries.
Trump's envoy is in Moscow today, where President Putin said he has serious questions about the deal. On Wall Street, the Dow has been lower all day. It's currently off 520 points. CBS News Brief, I'm Cammie McCormick.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. Attorney General Josh Call has announced Wisconsin will join another coalition of states filing a lawsuit against the Trump administration, this time over planned layoffs in the Department of Education. On Tuesday, the agency announced plans to lay off about 1,300 employees, or about half of its workforce. The coalition requested a court order to stop the dismantling of the department, arguing the layoffs are illegal and unconstitutional. Wisconsin has joined a number of lawsuits accusing the Trump administration of overstepping its authority. Republican state lawmakers have proposed ending daylight savings time in the state. State Representative Nate Gustafson and State Senator Rachel Cabral Guevara introduced the legislation, saying the disruptive transition can lead to increased risks and negatively affect mental health and productivity. They also noted the negative effect the time change has on young children who have their usual routines upended. Only two other states don't recognize daylight saving time, but a number of others have considered similar legislation. An upcoming fundraiser hosted by Forever Fit will benefit the Feed Our Kids food backpack program in Rice Lake. The Climb for Kids fundraiser will take place from March 24th to March 28th, during which participants will be asked to set a goal for how many flights of stairs they will climb on a stair-stepper exercise machine. They'll then be asked to collect pledges or make their own donations based on how many steps they climb in a 30-minute session at the event. The proceeds will go to support over 300 children in the area. Congressman Derek Van Orden hosted a virtual town hall on Wednesday amid criticisms over his perceived lack of availability to constituents. Congressman Van Orden began by repeating claims that George Soros-funded agitators have been disrupting in-person town halls across the country. He shared updates on the budget proposals in Congress and said he's been pushing back on some spending cut efforts by Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. He closed the town hall by answering a handful of pre-submitted questions from attendees. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
The Bucks, the Badgers, and more. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Big day for basketball. Wisconsin taking on Northwestern at the Big Ten tournament in Indianapolis. Max Kleisman, who missed the last three games with an ankle injury, asked if he was ready for today's tournament matchup.
Oh, yeah. Feeling good. Going to play.
We'll have a recap after the game later this afternoon. Earlier today was Oregon over Indiana, 72-59. Oregon has now won eight in a row and advanced to take on Michigan State tomorrow. In the Big East, it's Marquette against Xavier at Madison Square Garden. Tonight, a big game for the Milwaukee Bucks as they host the Lakers, but LeBron James has returned to L.A. to get more treatments for a left groin injury and will not be playing tonight. NFL running back A.J. Dillon excited to be joining Philly in free agency, tweeting, "Fly, Eagles, fly." Dillon leaving the Packers in free agency on a one-year deal with the Eagles. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Today's weather forecast is brought to you by SureTight Construction, raising the roof on quality and craftsmanship. There's no job too big or too small. Find them at SureTight.com.
Very spring-like and sunny today with warm temperatures rising to the mid-60s. Will become partly cloudy tonight with a chance of some storms early in the morning. During the day, it'll be windy and warm with highs climbing to the mid-70s. Then, strong to severe thunderstorms roll in at night. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 62 degrees.
SureTight Construction has been raising the roof on quality and craftsmanship. Family owned and operated for over 30 years, they specialize in residential and commercial projects. from siding and seamless gutters to asphalt, metal, and flat membrane roofs. Need a custom shed or garage? They have you covered. Visit SureTight.com today or call 715-720-0212. SureTight Construction, where your dreams become reality.
The Todd Alba Show.
Many of the supporters of Trump voted on good faith and said, look, he says some crazy things, but you know what? He at least is telling me he's going to help my family and bring down the price on my heating bill. And that ain't what they're getting. What they're getting back is a political middle finger. And we're staring a recession straight in the face. And Donald Trump does not care. Because at the end of the day, this was one big grift.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll take a look at the headlines, which are changing hour by hour, and also leave you at the end of the week with a laugh with Peter Rapine from E-Bombs World.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2. This is 93.5 The Tap.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are knee deep in the discussion of the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. Big debate last night. My sort of top level take is simply that there is no comparing these two candidates. Zero. Right. Zippo, none. They are completely distinguishable on every conceivable measure. First of all, if you want to say about their donations from very wealthy people, Elon Musk is the single largest funder by leaps and bounds, by multiples, than any other funder, whether to Susan Crawford's campaign or Schimmel's campaign. It's somewhere north of $11 million. George Soros, as best as I could definitely see about little bit under $1 million, but I assumed some other things just to be more conservative, look like maybe close to $2 million. Yeah, that's not even in the ballpark. And also, George Soros isn't requiring Susan Crawford to pledge fealty to George Soros. George Correct. Soros yes. isn't in the Oval Office with his kid rubbing boogers on the Resolute desk. Like, George Soros doesn't have the president doing his bidding every day. George Soros doesn't have a lawsuit proceeding that will end up before the Supreme Court.
He happens to like democracy.
Yes. It's different.
Yes.
It's so shocking. And just to, I wanted to recap a whole bunch of the things that Brad Schimmel is for. He's against the Wisconsin sunshine laws and open meetings laws.
Yep.
He's against those. He is an election denier when it comes to 2020.
Mm-hmm.
He said this just this week, quote, our donor base is excited to take this court back. The donor base. Would well, that include
that's
largest donor?
That's who he's representing is the donor base.
Yeah.
It's clear.
Not the citizens of Wisconsin.
Right.
The donor base.
The donor base.
He'll be a, quote, support network for Trump. Mm-hmm. He's defended Donald Trump after the Access Hollywood tapes came out. He was the only Republican from Wisconsin to do so. On a stage, gave Donald Trump a hug and was like, this is our guy. Don't worry about him talking about grabbing women's
shoes. Locker room talk, right?
Right. Yeah. Oh, he attended Donald Trump's inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, pro-gerrymander. Anti-choice, anti-Obamacare, a pro-voter suppression. Again, failed to timely test the 6,000 backlog of rape cases when he was attorney general, claiming funding problems. He eventually got around to it after there was enormous political pressure applied. Here's what an advocate, when you are the top law enforcement officer of a state and you want to advocate for victims of crime, here's what you do. You get on the phone every day and you call every Republican legislator in the state of Wisconsin to get you the money to get it done. You don't wait for grant funding
right.
to do which takes months. It is such bogusness. Well,
otherwise known as Maggie doing your job, right? You do your job.
You do your job as right. The state's chief law enforcement yes. officer. A couple of other things. Susan Crawford has never opposed school choice, just saying, some other things getting debunked. But by far, Tom, and I want to get your reaction to this before we talk about the continuing resolution and whether or not the Dems right. in the Senate should approve it. Here's my plea to every single one of you out there, especially the whataboutism of it all. Here's what Jeff from Superior, who's been hitting us up on the text line, calling Democrats crazy, CRT, DEI, blah, blah, blah. Do you want a Supreme Court that has people who are in good faith trying to follow the law? And that means when it comes to legislative redistricting in this state, it means that when we are largely a purple state, that anyone who would defend maps that skew the state legislature 60-65% veto-proof supermajorities in favor of one party isn't doing that. Very simple. Gerrymandering at that level is unconstitutional. And whether or not you believe that, it is also unconscionable. As a person of good faith, if you're sick of government not getting it done, then what you want are elected legislators that need to cooperate with one another.
Yeah, it provides accountability, right? Because in a gerrymandered situation, the accountability is not there, and therefore your vote does not count as much.
And for that reason alone, forget all of the rest of it. For that reason alone, you need to be voting for Susan Crawford, because yes. Susan Crawford will ensure fairer maps for all of us, for Republicans and Democrats, so that we have legislators that are incentivized to be accountable to us. You want less partisanship, right. less gridlock in government, more efficiency? So guess what? Let's start with getting rid of the gerrymandering.
Right. So, Maggie, what you're saying is please do your research. Please look at the candidates without a filter of whether you think they're a Democrat or Republican, and then go to the polls and vote. Because voting in Wisconsin in the spring elections is relatively small overall, and it's important that you do your research, make up your mind, and then go vote. But keep in mind that you want your vote to count, and therefore vote for someone who's going to ensure that your vote does count, not only now, but in the future, because that's why this race is so important, because it'll tip the court for a while. And I prefer to have a court that protects my vote versus a court that's going to look to somehow eliminate my vote.
And Jeff from Superior texting in, hey, Democrats gerrymander too.
Yep.
Yes.
And it's still wrong. Yes.
What I'm telling you, Jeff, and what is observable in this state's history, these aren't debatable facts.
Right.
Is that Republicans in this state executed the most partisan gerrymander in the history of the United States. And by doing so, effectively robbed Wisconsin citizens of their right to vote. Those are facts.
For 10 years. Yeah.
For 10 years did this. And so if we want to stop that, shouldn't we at least agree that we want a Supreme Court justice that is saying that that is a bad outcome, that legislators choosing their voters isn't the way we should be doing it here? Yep. That isn't Brad Schimmel. Brad Schimmel thinks gerrymandering's a great thing.
It's a tool. He's
right. That just, we agree in good faith, gerrymandering. Right. From a partisan basis is bad. If you agree with that on a good faith basis, Susan Crawford is the one that's standing up there saying, no, right. we should have fair maps in competitive legislative districts.
But we had this discussion with Jeff, 2 weeks ago, that if you believe in the Constitution, then you believe it for no matter what party is running the government.
Yes. And I also just want to, Jeff has made some statements on the text law that God's teaching is more important than the law. Well, that's not what we believe in the United States of America as a system of laws.
Well, who's God?
Right. Is it Allah? Is it Elohim?
Theoretically, there's not one based on all the beliefs we have in our country.
I mean, that's just, we fought in part not just for the freedom to not be taxed without representation. Yes. We also fought to believe what we will and for some modicum of a separation of church and state.
Yes.
Come on, Jeff. If you believe in the Constitution, which is what you said to us a week ago, then you believe in the separation of church and state, and you believe that God's laws, you may choose to follow them according to your God, but in the United States, we do better than that by having a system of laws for all of us.
Yep.
Tom, I'd like to get your take on the continuing resolution. Make the case on either side of the argument. Should Senate Democrats support it?
Yeah, and I'm going to say no, they shouldn't. I think this is the last tool they have left in the ever-limited toolbox. And in order for them to state their case to the American people, they have to state that they are not going to go with this continuing resolution, because in the House Republicans shot down an amendment that said that the Trump administration had to follow the current funding levels. And then the House Republicans denied that amendment to the continuing resolution, which to me would be simple, right? The amendment was just, let's follow the laws. And the Republicans insisted that that clause can't be in there, that amendment can't be in there. And because it's not in there, then the Senate Democrats should vote no on this. But they should also address the same thing. They should bring that amendment to the floor. They should have a debate about it. And if the Republicans shoot it down, then they should not lend their support to this continuing revolution. And just to be clear, they need 60 votes to be able to bring it to a vote. All right. So what the Democrats would say is, unless you let us participate in this discussion, we're unwilling to bring this to a vote. And I personally think that's the way it's supposed to work. That's the way it's been set up, because then it creates some level of bipartisanship, and the Republicans want their cake and they want to eat it too. So that's where we're at.
And we had a question yesterday from one of our listeners. I believe it was Jesse in Madison, about cloture.
Yes.
Or cloture, which is basically cloture, a very fancy word that means forcing debate to end and bringing it to a vote. And should Senate Democrats employ that procedural move in the Senate to force a vote on this? I am in your camp, Tom. Make Republicans try to get to 60. Make them have the debate. Let them debate themselves into the ground. Let them have whatever closed door meetings.
Right.
But I some of the reporting today, this is from The Hill, saying that despite Senator Chuck Schumer's statements in the press that he is going to allow the CR to not pass, that he's actually trying to create some space for Senator.
Oh, we're losing Maggie at this point. So as we head out, remember Civic Media, give us a call at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
Judge Brad Schimmel is an anti-choice politician whose positions are too extreme for Wisconsin women. He supports a pre-Civil War law that bans abortion. But don't take our word for it. Hear it in his own words.
The 1849 ban on abortions, which, by the way, what is squat about that bill?
The 1849 abortion ban provides no exceptions for rape or incest.
We're squat about that one.
The 1849 law criminalizes doctors and their patients.
We're squat about that one.
Brad Schimmel supports an 1849 law to ban abortion with no exceptions. Tell Brad Schimmel, extreme politics don't belong on Wisconsin's Supreme Court. Call 262-548-7548. That's 262-548-7548. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Incorporated.
Do you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt or personal loans? With credit card debt at all-time highs, Debt Relief Advocates is urgently notifying consumers of debt relief now being made available, designed to aid consumers with out-of-control credit card debt. Those who qualify and enroll for this relief program will only have to pay back a fraction of what they owe. This is not bankruptcy or a debt consolidation loan. This is a relief program that credit card companies would rather you not know about, as it ends your debt nightmare and saves you lots of money. Consumers owing at least $10,000 in credit card debt or personal loans can now take advantage of this debt relief as the cost of living skyrockets. Debt Relief Advocates has established a relief hotline for you to call to learn what debt reduction you may qualify for, so don't wait. For this free information, call the Relief Hotline at 800-303-1219. 800-303-1219. 800-303-1219.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Getting a little help from my friends today. That's each and every one of you joining our great conversation. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. And perhaps most importantly, when our tech goes a little haywire, we got Tom Paulswitz, my special guest co-host, also giving me a little help from my friends this afternoon. Thanks so much, Tom, for being with us. Folks, what do you think about the continuing resolution? Should Dems let the federal government shut down? Senator John Fetterman of Pennsylvania has been emphatic in his position that Democrats cannot let the government shut down. Tom and I, well, our position is, let it shut down. This is what people voted for. And Jeff from Superior, I'm looking at you, bud. You okay with the government shutting down? And oh yeah, by the way, did you happen to see the little provision that was tucked way in the weeds of the continuing resolution, Tom? Right. You want to tell the folks about it or should
I? Well, there's a couple in there. I'll let you jump on the one you're thinking of just to make sure we're on the same page.
Yeah, I think the most egregious little provision is this measure to essentially turn the clock off on the vote on the rule for the government funding bill, not the bill. It's a procedural vote to bring the CR up for a vote. And it basically says, like, no, there's no deadline anymore. It's this very kind of wonky thing. And it's like a loophole, if you will, fundamentally changes the rules of the Senate, especially when it comes to these continuing resolutions to continue federal funding. And what it actually then operates as is a potential black hole legally where Donald Trump, without Congress, could begin and maybe have a greater legal defense to defund all of these departments and shut things down. It looks like this ticky-tacky, oh, we got to have the CR bill voted on within these certain time periods. Oh, but no. It means the next one, for example, if they kick this one out, Schumer's been talking about a 30-day extension. The next time around, there's going to be this loophole where Trump can say, look, Article 3 judges and Supreme Court, I actually can defund all these departments. Congress, ipso facto, through this little technical bit, gave me permission to do so.
Because they've given me back that power or given it to me because that's what they decided to do. Yeah, but here's the thing, and that's why this is so weird, is because Donald Trump and his administration has been defunding every single department within the government. Outside, I mean, they're basically doing impoundment and they're not being held accountable to it. But the Republicans are still going through the charade of passing a continuing resolution. This is the part I don't understand. Like, you can't say that what you're doing is legal, but then need Congress to be able to do this other thing, which is because it's illegal. So I've never understood the Trump's administration to how they're working the courts. But I don't know if you just saw what came out very shortly. It came out probably about a half hour ago. The Trump administration is going to the Supreme Court about birthright citizenship. And they're not appealing the ruling about birthright citizenship. They're appealing that this is a universal injunction. So they're appealing the fact that these courts are able to create universal injunctions instead of just injunctions for the particular individual who is bringing the case. Yeah. And I was very curious to see what you had to say about that, Maggie, because it's an interesting legal, I guess, potentially loophole, but I just don't see that it makes any sense unless you want to do it for everyone else and you're going to battle these one at a time.
Yeah, what it does is it requires an enormous, if the Supreme Court bites on this, where, yeah. And this would fly in the face of decades of jurisprudence, the idea that if the federal government is taking action X, and you file a suit, say, in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, which gets appealed up to the Seventh Circuit Appeals Court, which covers Wisconsin, Illinois, and Indiana. And the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals says, yes, we're going to give you this preliminary injunction to stop the federal government from doing X. The parties before that appeals court can say, we think this injunction should apply nationwide because it's effectively kind of like a class action argument. Plaintiffs that are similarly situated to us are also being harmed in all these other jurisdictions and all of these other areas of the country. And courts have done so when it is a federal government action that has nationwide applicability.
Because it crosses all the states. It's like it's correct. Applicable it to every single other lawsuit. Sense. Yes.
Duh. Correct.
Right.
Now, what the ordinary course would be is when you get one of those injunctions that's upheld by an appeals court that you don't like, you appeal the injunction itself on an emergency motion to the Supreme Court.
Yes.
They're not appealing on the merits.
No.
Is what you're saying, Tom. What they're appealing is that an injunction can have nationwide effect. And if they succeed in that argument, which is entirely novel, what they would require is for plaintiffs to fund and bring these lawsuits in every single potentially, I haven't read the argument about how narrowly they're trying to tailor their argument, but potentially in every single district court in the nation. So instead of
in every single individual, potentially,
correct, you would maybe have to bring hundreds of these, which is, guess what? If you're teeing off against the federal government and you have to bring like 1,000 lawsuits and they have all of the lawyers in the federal government, like the federal government's probably going to win some of those and be able to do some pretty blatantly unconstitutional things because the people that are being harmed in your neighborhood may not actually have the shekels or the access to public interest advocacy lawyers to raise and file a lawsuit. It's literally saying, unless you're rich and can file lawsuits, we're going to do unconstitutional things to you because screw you.
Right. But here's the saving grace is we have Elon Musk looking for fraud, waste, and abuse.
And this
clearly would fall under waste, right? Because why spend all those tax dollars fighting these suits individually when they really fall under a universal injunction?
Do you mean like the $1.6 million Brad Schimmel spent?
Yes.
Unsuccessfully trying to defend some abortion restriction that the state had adopted? You know, like that kind of
I'm waiting for Musk to put a minus sign in Trump's golf on the Doge website.
Like or maybe on the KAED honor coins that Schimmel came up with a few years back.
Yes. Yep.
We're going to come back with more. I've got aldermanic candidate Dan Bauman joining us. Do you know that he's running against a guy that's been credibly accused of stalking a number of times? We're going to discuss with Tom and you and Dan.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt Nair on Air.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Commodities are holding firm for now in Chicago. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report. And while that's good, John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing in West Bend, says the biggest issue is the equity investments.
You know, we've seen the Dow and lose over 3,000 points here now since the middle, the end of January. And I think that's actually triggered a little bit of money back into the commodity sector after they've sold off relatively aggressively as well. You know, we saw cattle, hogs sell off. We saw the pressure in the grain markets, as well as some of the other smaller soft markets like, you know, cocoa and coffee and things of that nature. Now it seems like the money, you know, because of the risk-off mentality in the equity markets, looks for a place to go, and some of those commodities got cheaper.
Once again, that's John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing. I'll look at your closing markets right after this.
It's still sinking in. All the medals that Bavaria Sausage brought home from the German Butchers Association competition. Scott Stoll, one of the owners of Bavaria Sausage, says they walked away with 49 medals, 30 that were gold, and all the products they submitted, something you can purchase today.
Yeah, we picked products right out of the freezer, right out of the deli case, right out of our coolers. And that's what we brought. We did not do a special batch of any of this. We didn't know, but we had a feeling that we'd do pretty well with the Germans on this one.
That's Scott Stoll, one of the owners of Bavaria Sausage, capturing 49 medals at the recent German Butcher Association Meat Products Competition, recognizing the quality that started more than 60 years ago with Fred Vohl. Bavaria Sausage. Shop those award-winning meats today at the corner of Nesbitt Road, Fitchrota Road in Fitchburg. Open Monday through Friday, 9 until 7, Saturday, 9 until 1, or always open online. BavariaSausage.com.
I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your closing markets. Cash corn closed at 460 and three quarters. That was down 9.5 cents. New crop corn closed at 448 and a quarter, down 6.25 cents. Cash beans closed at 10.5. That was down 10.75. And new crop beans closed at 10.06.5, and that was down 9 cents. Cash wheat closed at 5.54. That was down 2.75. And new crop wheat closed at 5.69.5, down 2.25 cents. On the dairy side of things, things are looking a little bit better here as April Class 3 milk contract is trading at $17.94 a hundredweight. That is up 50 cents. And May milk is trading at $17.99 a hundredweight, and that is up 37 cents. Barrel cheese closed at $1.67. That was up 2.5 cents. 40-pound block cheese closed at $1.72.5. That was up 5.5 cents. And the AA butter closed up a penny and closed today at $2.34. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Very spring-like and sunny today with warm temperatures rising to the mid-60s. We'll become partly cloudy tonight with a chance of some storms early in the morning. During the day, it'll be windy and warm with highs climbing to the mid-70s. Then, strong to severe thunderstorms roll in at night. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 62 degrees.
Wounded Warrior Project has been there for me since that first day in the hospital. They got me out of the house. They got me connected with other veterans, and they helped me face my PTSD. They support me and my family at every turn. And now I'm helping other warriors realize that they're not alone.
Through our hands-on programs, supportive community, and ongoing advocacy, we help post-9/11 veterans realize what's possible. Learn more at woundedwarriorproject.org/possible.
Earl Ingram.
Today we are seeing the largest number of humanitarian emergencies since after World War II. We should be expanding our life-saving aid programs, not shutting them down during this time of crisis. I don't care where they come from. They are human beings. We weren't even having this conversation before 7 weeks ago, before Donald Trump took office, before a monster took office.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
On Friday, a live interview with candidate for State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Brittany Kinzer, on why she's challenging incumbent Jill Underley.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
TV.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm very excited to bring on our next guest, a candidate for Milwaukee's vacant aldermanic seat. His name is Dan Bauman. Dan, welcome to The Maggie Dawn Show. I really appreciate you making time. Why are you running for an aldermanic seat in Milwaukee?
It's a good question, and I'll answer it. I did not think about running for politics until maybe a few months ago. Losing Alderman Brastoff was a big shock, and obviously a big loss for our district. And I think that combined with what happened on the federal level with the presidential election shook a lot of people here in this district and obviously outside of the district. I really was happy with the service that we were getting in this district. There are a lot of things that we talk about doing as a city in Milwaukee that I think the city looks to this district to get it right and push on those things, especially because of the progressive values of a lot of people in the third district. So it was really important to us. It was kind of interwoven with living in this district and raising a family here. Was pushing the city towards progress, and I ultimately made the decision to run. At that point, when I personally made the decision, there was nobody running. And then obviously we ended up with a field of 8 people. So it's been an extremely exciting campaign so far. And I do think that it was really beneficial to have a lot of strong candidates running for this seat. A lot of really good things kind of came to the forefront in terms of what we were discussing that, within the minds of 2 or 3 candidates might be there, but not necessarily brought out and spoken about. So we were able to really touch on some issues and then collectively just really kind of deal with the challenges that we're all facing right now with uncertainty. So
one of the things I looked at, and I live just outside of your district, literally by like a half a block. The other side of my block is in your district. One of the things that I looked at, Daniel, coming up to the primary, just because a lot of people ask me, hey, who should I vote for? I get those text messages and phone calls a lot. And I had read in detail the answers that were either submitted or given by each of the primary candidates to the slate of questions submitted to all of the primary candidates by the Journal Sentinel. And I encourage every single voter in the third city of Milwaukee aldermanic district to revisit those answers. You can go to the Journal Sentinel's website. This is an unlocked free article you can get. Here is why, though I do not live in your district, Daniel, I am very happy to publicly endorse you on this show as the former Corporation Counsel of Milwaukee County and as a former City of Milwaukee employee.
Thank you.
Your answers showed thoughtfulness and an understanding of local government. I don't believe local government is partisan, really, in many elements. This is about providing services in a transparent, efficient, and effective way to constituents with an understanding of how government works. One of the things that drives me bananas is watching local elected officials chase all kinds of issues so that they can have press conferences and see their names in the newspapers about things that they have zero impact on as local elected officials. I wanted to give you an opportunity, Daniel, to tell people about your background, because I think a lot of folks that run for office actually don't have meaningful understandings of how government works at the different levels, local, state, and federal. So what's your background, Daniel? And if you could speak to, I think, what is one of the top issues on people's minds in the city of Milwaukee, which is reckless driving and public safety. So if you could answer both of those, and then I'll let my co-host Tom ask you a couple of questions.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity and then for the support. I was born and raised in Milwaukee in the Sherman Park neighborhood. When I grew up, that was still a bustling, thriving, diverse, middle-class neighborhood. So I kind of had a vantage point of seeing steady decline as jobs were leaving the city. So, I would drive by A.O. Smith as a child on Capitol, and that stack of car frames was just, whittling away. So over the years, obviously seeing just the decline and really, kind of neglect and just resources, leaving those communities. So that's kind of what I've always held in my heart in terms of the city and seeing that and knowing that we need to kind of take care of people, whether or not it's in the third district or not. I went to school in Madison, ended up in New York. I was an AmeriCorps Vista worker in Brooklyn, ended up in the private sector for longer than I thought I would be, and ended up meeting my wife and starting a family out there, and always was looking for a way to come back. And for us, the pandemic allowed us an opportunity to be flexible, and we came back to Milwaukee, and I decided to become engaged in public affairs and more nonprofit work. So I ended up on the mayor's campaign, Mayor Johnson, his first campaign. That gave me an opportunity to really see all the problems in the city. I was always following things closely, but just kind of a crash course, because you can't hide from any of the issues when you're running for mayor. You're going all over the city, and you're going to hear from the folks who are most upset, obviously. So that was a good opportunity for me. I ended up working in the mayor's office for about 11 months. I was an outreach worker in the mayor's office, got a chance to work in neighborhoods that overlapped with Alderman Brostoff, got a chance to work with him, and really appreciate what the job was based on his approach to it and his kind of customer service oriented approach to being an Alder person, especially someone who we know all was very passionate about issues. And I think people really had a good sense of where he lied politically. He was very oriented towards serving his constituents. And as somebody who really appreciates clean and responsive government, I always appreciated that. So in this district, yeah, obviously public safety. I think that the difference between candidates is what that means to you. So for me, public safety really, it starts with, as a parent of two children, safety on the streets and being able to walk around, being able to bike around, and not worry about cars driving 50 miles an hour in residential areas or areas where we want to congregate and, you know, visit stores and commercial corridors. So it starts with street safety. It starts with vibrant energy, you know, places where there's nothing happening in a particular community. If you liven those areas up and you have kind of bustling commercial corridors, those are generally safer areas. You have people around, that makes things safer. I think it's normalized now for us to talk about addressing the root causes of crime, but that's absolutely critical because, you know, crime will continue to persist if we're not dealing with the issues. And as long as the issues are there in the city, regardless of where you are, those issues are going to find their way into your district. And some districts aren't used to that. So when it does happen, it's a huge deal. When crime happens, it's a major quality of life issue for people. It usually trumps issues of, you know, snow removal and trash pickup. So we got to work on that. But we do have to look at what's causing that and what we as a city can do. Especially we're in a situation where I think people feel like they have a different relationship with police than they used to. Mm-hmm. They don't see the beat cop around anymore. So we've had to deal with that a lot. And just we need to strengthen city services. We need to reinstill kind of pride and trust in what the city is doing. And when you're asking residents to kind of, you know, bear with you and, you know, put up with certain things, because we all know Milwaukee is facing challenges right now, you have to meet them when they have, you know, actionable requests for help. You gotta make sure you take those wins, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Keep everybody on the same team.
Right.
Folks, you're listening to 3rd District Aldermanic candidate Daniel Bauman in the city of Milwaukee. I'm joined by co-host Tom Paulswitz. Tom, I know you had a couple of questions for Daniel as well.
Yeah, just a quick observation. I lived on the East Coast for a little while also, so I can hear a little bit of East Coast-ness in your language. So make sure you say bubbler quite a bit on the campaign trail.
All the time, yeah.
that'll make sure you cover that. Yep. Obviously, you know that the sales tax change has brought in a tremendous amount of money for the city, and it filled somewhat of the gap. But I still feel like the city is still facing some fiscal challenges moving forward. What are your thoughts there, and what are you saying to your constituents when you get those questions?
Yeah, it is, obviously. I think one of the responses to that is when you're talking about the vision for the district, right? We have to bring in activity into this district. So obviously we're talking about bringing it in for the city as a whole, But if we want to continue to bring in services and keep services where they are, we need to generate some activity. We need other institutions, organizations, developers, what have you, to see positive momentum happening. So we continue to see investment in this district and make the case for continued services and even improved services, right? Because we are in this district generally better off than a lot of people in terms of economics. So when we're talking about equity, right, people need to understand that, no, you can't ask for a particular service more than anyone else because of what you pay in property tax. And I think people, for the most part, understand that. Mm-hmm. So what we can do is we can be an incubator of new innovation and kind of more urban lifestyle over here, I think. And that generally creates more commerce and activity and tax revenue.
Excellent.
Daniel, I wanted to ask you, please take the opportunity to tell people why they should be voting for you as opposed to your opponent. What are your key differentiators, to use a business term, if you will?
I think for me, I can hit the ground running day one. I built a lot of solid relationships with different city departments in my work at City Hall. And that was just built on collaboration and trust. So, you know, in terms of the departments that you need to help out when people have issues, I have a good working relationship with there. I already kind of know what some of the frustrations are in City Hall, right? So I'm not going to be surprised to see that, and it won't kind of blindside me. So I'm aware and expecting some challenges there, and I have a strong interest in working with other alders, just because of you know, my nature of having grown up on the north side, and going to citywide schools, having a network of friends, loved ones all over the city. Have a strong interest in the city, and I think that will really make it vital for me to work with folks representing other districts as well, ultimately being able to push legislation. So I understand that this is a representative role, and while I might have strong principles on something, this job requires meeting people where they are and figuring things out. So I take that very seriously. And I have no prior agenda. I have no obligations other than to meet the needs of the residents of this district.
One of the things I'm going to take this opportunity to say to you, I've had numerous conversations, both publicly on the air and privately, with candidates, newly elected local officials. I have two big suggestions for you. Though I don't live in your district, I am a city resident and a native Milwaukee. And the first one is, you are going to get over the course of your elected official career, if you're elected, so many requests from so many different people about so many different things. Please know what the maybe two, three, maybe four things are that are your whys, that are fundamentally such critical values and important to you. And frankly, because you can't be everything to everybody, be candid with people about what those are.
Yes.
And secondly, my ask of you is, please be candid with constituents when they are asking you to do things that are beyond our ability in local government. Yeah. Hey, here's who to contact for that. We can't do that. And don't waste people's time just to get your name in the papers. If
so
you
know, no grandstanding, right? Yep.
Yes. Exactly.
Yep.
Yep. Awesome.
Daniel Bellman, candidate. Yeah, candidate for the 3rd Aldermanic District in the state of Milwaukee. Again, my endorsement to you, sir, and best of luck.
Thank you. So nice
to hear a reasonable person running for elected office that knows how government actually works. Folks, my name is Maggie Dawn. We'll be back with Tom Paulswitz and our last segment for this Thursday afternoon after these brief messages. Join us, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Do you know or work with kids who have special healthcare needs? Help them live their best lives. Contact Wisconsin Wayfinder Children's Resource Network. our specialists will connect you with services in your area. Wisconsin Wayfinder is free and confidential. Call 877-947-2929 or visit dhs.wi.gov/WISCWAY. Connect today. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. More Trump administration mass layoffs at CISA have experts raising concerns over U.S. readiness for cyber attacks on election infrastructure and federal agency networks. An additional 100 in-house and contracted cyber specialists were reportedly terminated in March. The terminations raised the number of layoffs at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency to an estimated 300, though new CISA leadership has denied recent layoffs. As we reported in February, a team assisting state election officials in improving and hardening election systems was laid off. VoteBeat reported March 11th that CISA's new leadership informed state election officials that it had suspended operations and funding for the Election Infrastructure Information Sharing and Analysis Center. In addition, a McCarthy-like effort is underway to purge CISA staffers who ran 2020 efforts to combat foreign and domestic disinformation in social media, some concocted by the Trump campaign and its allies. Reports in cybersecurity journals say that the latest layoffs involve so-called red teams, which pressure test the security of government networks. CBS News quoted one cybersecurity expert let go in February as saying about U.S. networks, "We're being targeted daily, hourly, and every single minute." We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Welcome back, everybody. It is the last segment of the day, so join us, 855-752-4842. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. In case you're a Hoops fan, as both I and Tom are, a wee bit of breaking news. Both the University of Wisconsin-Madison and Marquette University men's basketball teams chalking up, putting some W's on the board today. That's good news. I'm not super hopeful for the for March Madness, Tom. Are you?
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's good to see them win their first conference tournament game. So that's always good, right? Because when you lose that first conference game, you go into the tournament because they'll both be in it, but you go in sort of hamstrung a little bit. So I'm excited to see that. Yep.
You want some momentum entering into March Madness,
right,
for sure.
Yep.
Also, a bit of breaking news off of X. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat of New York, apparently was talking pretty loudly during the Senate Democratic Caucus lunch this afternoon, making the case against Dems allowing the government to shut down. That is pretty interesting. Maybe shouting about it, not the best approach. We've got our good friend Jeff from Superior on the line. Jeff, what would you like to say this afternoon, sir?
Well, you'll be happy to know, Maggie, that I'm in Spooner right now and on the main street with Maple here, Highway 63 and Maple. All four corners are covered by people supporting Crawford. They're holding placards saying they're against Doge. I mean, it's everything you're saying. You got people here in Spooner, Wisconsin, amplifying your message.
Well, those would be probably residents of Spooner, would be my guess. Yes.
I don't know that they're amplifying my message. They're amplifying their voices, and I applaud them for that. Yes. Political engagement, no matter what your politics, is always a plus for democracy. Jeff, what's your thought or comment question this afternoon?
My thought, and I know we can't elaborate on this, but I'm honestly thinking that this Trump administration is it's a reset. It's, you know, the balance of power is swinging to the right. Because for the past 100 years since Woodrow Wilson and the founding of the Federal Reserve, our bureaucracy has grown too big. It's actually not constitutional. If we went back to a president with a cabinet with a reasonable amount of government federal employees, I think people would be happier with their liberties. That's the only thing I want to say. But it doesn't mean I'm right. I just appreciate the opportunity to talk about it.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that, Jeff, because that's an opinion. But I would say the success of this country from, I would say, about 1935 to 1980 was predicated on the fact that we taxed the people who could afford to pay for the growth of the infrastructure that created the American dream. And, you know, our recent aldermanic candidate we just had on talked about A.O. Smith. And A.O. Smith, the closing of A.O. Smith in the early 90s left a hole in the city of Milwaukee that is yet to be filled. And there's no amount of government sending or anything else right now that's changing that. But do you believe in a safety net? Do you believe that people should be have the chance, no matter where they're born, to be able to pursue the American dream? Or do you believe in a birthright to say that wherever you're born is where you're going to end up? Because studies show over and over again that economically that's the case.
Yeah, and I also, let's just accept, Tom, as for argument's sake, that we have a federal government that's too large and efficiency improvements should happen. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, so the question becomes how? And how do you do that without placing people in harm's way? And I don't mean just the federal worker. I can make a case on the law that we have civil service rules and laws for a reason. It's to avoid political patronage and favor trading and all of the corruption that I think we can agree is bad in government. But the way to achieve, I think, renewed faith in government isn't this way. It has to be done legally. It has to be done through meaningful audits. It has to be done through Congress.
Right.
That Donald Trump isn't proceeding in that way, that it's not deliberate, it's not intentional, it doesn't involve the legislature, I think shows, tips the hat a bit to what the actual objective is. And it's not a functional, more efficient, more effective federal government.
It is not.
It's a federal government that serves the wealthiest people in this country by removing the sorts of regulations that help protect regular people, by shrinking the tax burden for billionaires and placing the funding obligation for the entirety of federal government on the backs of working people and middle class.
Yeah. And also, Maggie, you already know this, right? We should be talking percentages, not raw dollars, right? Because obviously the size of the country has grown substantially in the last 100 years. The amount of money in circulation has grown substantially. One of the keys I look at is federal government spending as a percentage of GDP, and then revenue as a percentage of GDP. Those numbers went sideways under G.W. Bush and have been sideways ever since because Republicans insist on cutting taxes. So they're below the 20% threshold, which you would need to create a stable amount of revenue coming in to keep the programs that we've done running. So they're creating an artificial situation.
Fiscal crisis.
Yeah, which is only because they've cut taxes too much. And when you talk about balancing the budget, you have to consider both sides. And I would love to see
revenues and expenditures.
I would love to see one conservative talk about that, because if we're running it like a business always talks about revenue and expenses.
And when Tom says they've cut taxes too much, let's be clear here. They've cut taxes too much
for the wealthy.
For billionaires, 100 millionaires, and the wealthiest corporations. Tax code is an expression of our values as Americans. We can support small businesses and growing businesses. We can support the middle class and people that are willing to work hard. And we can do that by creating a fair tax code. We don't have it today. What are we going to do about it? I'll be back tomorrow to discuss more with each and every one of you. My thanks to Tom and you all for listening. That's going to do it for me this afternoon. Stay tuned. Dom Salvi is up next. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
The Tap. Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
How are the Trump policies going to affect agriculture? We'll find out with Zachiel Torres-Small, who was the Deputy Secretary of Agriculture in the Biden administration.
Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone.
If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap,
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The Dow was off 537 points today over more tariff worries. The French have reacted angrily to President Trump's latest threats to tax wine. Pauline Bastidon is with the European Trade Group.
It's time to move on from these unnecessary disputes, talk, find solutions, and most importantly, leave us out of this.
Canadian officials were in Washington today meeting with Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick. A federal judge has ruled that probationary workers fired by the federal government must be offered reinstatement. CBS's Jake Rosen.
The judge, who was appointed by former President Bill Clinton, noted that the federal law does allow for agencies to engage in a reduction of force, but it requires them to adhere to several requirements to do so, which did not happen in this case.
President Trump's envoy is in Moscow for talks on the Ukraine ceasefire deal.
Now we're going to see whether or not Russia's there, and if they're not, it'll be a very disappointing moment for the world.
CBS News Brief, I'm Cammie McCormick.
Local radio.